Good morning. My name is Christina Ashmit, and I'm from Redmond, and I work in the Office 365 engineering team in the CXP group, which stands for customer experience. And so the team that I work with actually owns looking at the Office 365 platform end-to-end from a customer and IT pro partner experience. So specifically, I work in support as a workload. So we've identified support and sort of our need to be more simple and better at providing tools and documentation and information to users and IT pros to support their users and customers. And so we're looking at how do we innovate and support what we're calling modern support. So that's kind of what my role is. This presentation is really driven from that perspective in that we just wanted to drive awareness of the tools that we have, where those tools are living, so that as we add new tools, we want to add new diagnostics, we want to add new troubleshooters, we want to add new guided walkthroughs. And as we release them, I want to drive visibility as to where they are, how do you find them, so you know where to check on a regular basis. And then show you some of the innovation we're doing in modern support towards the end. And the beginning of the presentation is around sort of our top issues. So we decided to talk about some of the things or common problems in Office 365 and talk about how to troubleshoot those, what tools are available, answer any questions that you might have. So that sets that up. So the two areas for top issues is Mailflow and SharePoint. Those are the two that we're going to focus on for the most part because those are the areas where customers seem to struggle the most. I am not a SharePoint expert. I know more about Mailflow than I do about SharePoint, but I have slides that the product team gave me, that group, that workload gave me, so I'm going to talk to them. So if you have really in-depth questions, I will do my best, but I'm going to have to take a note and get back to you. So, okay. Let's get started. So this, I'm not going to go through this slide. This is just my picture. So when we train our agents, our frontline agents, this is sort of the diagram we use to talk about Mailflow. And so this is sort of mail flow through Office 65. And you can see there's a lot of different components. There's the sender side. There's the receiver side. There's things in the middle. And so troubleshooting mail flow is difficult because there's so many different points of possible failures. And so that's all this slide is meant to show you, is that it's not necessarily simple. It's quite complex. So when we think about mail flow problems, there's a couple of areas that we want to check first. The end user's computer, you know, is it the right software? Is it configured properly? Is it connected to the network? You know, all the simple stuff. There's rules and compliance. There's spam filtering. There's DNS records that have to be in place for Office 365 to know where to route the mail, to know that it's legitimate mail. Then, of course, there's always the recipient's domain. If it's internal, it's easier to troubleshoot. If it's external, there's some things that are beyond your control. And so this is really around the next couple of slides, we're going to talk about the tools we built to try to troubleshoot through that process. And then when you add things like hybrid scenarios, and you just add more complexity into that picture that we saw originally. So some of these are our common connection problems. So when I say common, I mean if you look at the issues that come through our support organization, these are always in the top 10. DNS records, these are the root causes. DNS records not set up, or the company merged or migrated or changed and didn't update the DNS records and the mail gets in a loop. Outlook profiles are set up to use a specific server name instead of AutoDiscover. So in Office 365, because we move mailbox servers around for resiliency and for our ability to recover fast, you know, so we can take your mailbox down and move it to another server, and we're constantly moving things around in the data center sort of automatically and dynamically, that if you have it set to a specific server name, you could lose your mail if we move the server. We move the mailbox off that server. So the AutoDiscover really enables us to have that flexibility in the data center. So that's why it's important. And then, of course, an unsupported version of Outlook. So this slide is about troubleshooting domains. On the orange boxes is sort of the scenario, and on the pink, what looks like pink boxes to me, is sort of the things to check. The only real thing I want to call out, one of the things I want to call out here is about 72 hours. So if you do make any changes to DNS records, they have to propagate, and it can be up to 72 hours to take effect. When you remove a domain, there are subdomains that Office 365 can have and can have reserved for that. And so all of those have to be removed as well. Otherwise, you can't. It won't actually let you delete that domain. And then the verifying domain is pretty simple because when you try to add a domain, we verify it for you on in line right now. Nowadays, that's what we do for you today, where we weren't doing that before. So, okay, DNS. So this is just a quick list, quick dirty list of all the DNS records that are required and what they're used for. The SPF record I want to call out, because that will, without that, your mail will go into spam filters. So you want to ensure to put a SPF filter or SPF record. And again, you want to use the CNAME record for auto discover for Exchange. And then you might notice for Link, there's two CNAME records, one's for mobile clients and one's for desktop clients. So to make sure that you have both of those in place. Okay, so these are some of the tools. If you have Exchange Online, you can use Message Trace. So they actually changed, let me go out to, so the Office 365 Admin Center, this is the Admin Center, it's been changed today. Mine, for me, has been changed today. So it was quite shocking. But if you go to the Message Center, if you go to Admin Center here, you have tools. You used to, under each of these Admin Centers on the bottom, for Exchange, for Link, for SharePoint, you used to have a tools thing. Those are no longer there. So for Exchange specifically, they're just intermixed. So if we look at Exchange, waiting for the internets. Wait for it. Wait for it. It's taking really long. All right, well, maybe we won't wait for it. Oh, look at that. Welcome. Okay, so it's organized by activity, if you will, or scenario. So if you look under mail flow, you'll see there's the message trace under mail flow here. Sorry. The delivery receipts is moved somewhere, which I can't find at the moment. Let's see. Go to message trace. So message trace allows you to look for a particular message. So say the CEO says, I sent this mail and so-and-so didn't get it, right? Why didn't he get it? So the message trace will go back into all of the logs and it will look for the mail that you have to give it information about the sender and the receiver. The thing about this data is it's stored in a big data warehouse, which we call affectionately Cosmos internally. And so it's all unstructured. And so to actually get the search to happen is going to take, the mail has to be 24 hours late. Right, so that all of the data gets in there. And then when we go look for it, it's going to take us, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour to find the message and search through all that data. So if you sent mail, somebody sends a mail, and 2 hours later it's not done yet, and you run message trace, you're likely not to find it because it has to get through all the logs downstream into the big data warehouse. And then from there, that's where we're querying it. Okay, so just something to be aware of. So these are screenshots that talk about how to read the message trace. So when it comes back, it'll tell you all the hops for the mail, where it is, what the status is, was it delivered, was it not delivered. This part at the bottom here is where you care about. So it says that it was, the sender is Alan, the recipient was Tom, it was not delivered. And then you can drill into it and you can see, you know, what the message, what happened to it, where it got stopped. And so you can see all the servers that it was received by. This is a on-prem sort of hybrid scenario example. Delivery reports, which I'll have to go find out where they moved it to. The difference between delivery reports is that the user can actually run this themselves. So if they said, I didn't get a message and they want to get a delivery report, they can put in their sender, who they're sending it to, and they can run a report and find out what Exchange says about their message. And so there's a couple of scenarios or outcomes. You know, if it's internal and it doesn't get delivered, then it's a problem in the either the Office 365 Exchange system, or if you're only online, or if you're only on-prem, it's in your Exchange server problem. If it's sent to an external, your problem may be with the receiver, like it goes into theirs, their mailbox doesn't exist, their gateway isn't set up, they're not receiving it, it got filtered as spam, something like that. And then ultimately, if it doesn't get sent, you get an NDR back. So when you get a non-delivery receipt, You can use the NDR to diagnose what the problem was. If you get a 5-dot something code, it'll tell you what server, what the originating server was, and what the error was. And if it's a 4 code, then it just means it's transient. If it's a 5 code, it's persistent. So those are the ones you care about, and those are the ones you want to take action on. And I think in the appendix I put some screenshots of NDRs. I didn't know if we wanted to go through that today. So this sort of summarizes who can use what, when to use what. So if you use message trace, it's only for admins. Users can use the delivery report. Some of the features are dependent on the SKU that you have, so not all SKUs have access to all things. I wish I knew enough about marketing to tell you which are the ones that don't have access to it, but I don't keep up on all that stuff. So, but I can show you where the website is that tells you. So, this, I want to talk about some sort of just bits of information that you may or may not know or may be hard to find in our deluge of support.microsoft.com. So deleting and restoring user mailboxes. So after 30 days, if you delete a mailbox, it's really, really gone. Really, for reals. It's not coming back. So if you have a retention policy and you delete the mailbox, I do not know what happens. How are you deleting it? Are you removing the license or are you?
We're not on Office 365. This is one of those questions that will determine whether or
not. Oh, okay. So that's a good question. I don't know what happens. In Office 365, as I understand it, and again, I would probably have to double check with someone to give you a definitive, but as I understand it, if it's 30 days, it's over. And there's several ways to decommission the mailbox, if you will. One is to delete the mailbox. The other is to remove the license. If you wanted to remove the license and add a different person's license to it, like a retention license or an admin license, and copy the mail somewhere, you could store it offline that way. But as far as the service goes, the data retention is 30 days. And it's pretty much, it's gone by then. So we do get people who call like 31 days later and say, oh no, wait, I didn't mean to delete that user, or I need to get that data back, and it just doesn't exist anymore. So, any other questions about that? Anybody worried about their mail being deleted after 30 days? Okay, love it. Size limits. So the limits change. We have a tendency to change things. So depending on when you bought our tenancy with the Office 365 service is the limits that you get. We don't necessarily go back and change the limits that you have, unless, of course, they're better, and then we give you the better ones. It takes a while to propagate some of the limits throughout the data centers, so even if we make an announcement for a limit, it might take a while for it to hit your tenant specifically. You can't modify any of these limits, but they're good to be aware of. You can modify them as long as they're less. Like if you want to like restrict your users to something less, you can. But you can't give them more. Yeah. And then of course they apply both internal and external recipients, right? There's no discrimination there. So. Yeah, so you can do 10,000 within a 24-hour period. But if you want to do 10,000 in one, yeah, you would want to stage it. The recipient rate? Oh, the limit. Oh, I see what you're saying. Sorry, I was looking at the rate.
Because like we have a very locked down DL and a locked down sender list, and they're allowed to send basically like 1,000.
Okay. Yeah, you'd have to.
Is it dynamic or is it just a regular
list?
Yeah. So there's nested groups within the DL that you want to send to. So you would probably have to send to the nested ones. That's a good question. I don't know how they handle that. There has to be a way, but I don't know the answer to that.
Our nested ones are based on the server, which is 2,500.
Still going to meet that limit, yeah. I'll take a note.
Yeah, that'd be a problem for us too.
Yeah. I'm sure that somebody solved this. My guess is you have to use a PowerShell script and script it, but I'll find out.
Well,
Okay.
He's in dynamic.
So it's just for static?
Right.
Yeah. If you want to actually type in a list of more, you can't do that. These are SharePoint limits. I think these have recently changed. So one of the things I want to call out here is that the My Site allocation, every user gets a My Site allocation of 500 megabits. It does not count towards your storage. You can't pool it together, so everybody's going to get that. And then the OneDrive storage, the 1 gig storage per user, is unmanaged, and what we mean by that is you can't pool that together either. You can't say these 50 people get 2 gigs, but these people get 50. It's unmanaged. Everybody gets one, and there's no management to it. You just get one by default. Does that make sense?
That's what
OneDrive for business. Yeah, I don't know. This was the last I had from the team, so I did hear it changed. Let's see, is there anything else I want to call out here? Anybody have any questions about? I find the service description very confusing, but again, I'm not a marketing person. Okay, so let's talk about SharePoint performance. I have a couple of tips about SharePoint performance. 75% of the pages load what we consider fast, under 100 milliseconds, 1,000 milliseconds, right? The slowest 1% of the pages in SharePoint take 5,000 milliseconds to load. And so there's a couple of reasons for that. And so we just wanted to talk about sort of how SharePoint Online works, some of the architecture things behind it, and some of the things you can do to increase the performance of your pages. So this is what we think of on-prem. You have a server, you have a network, and you have the page that gets displayed, and it's pretty simple and straightforward. The user hits the server, the page data gets displayed. When you think about how SharePoint Online works, it's actually not an server. It's data spread across multiple servers, sort of sharded. And then the network isn't necessarily straight either because it goes through multiple paths. And we add the CDN in different locations to try to speed up data delivery. And so when you have a lot of busy pages and you have lots of round trips in your HTTP traffic, then your page takes longer and longer to load. That's really the point of that. So top five causes. So the first one is navigation. A deep navigation tree for your SharePoint is going to cause it to load slower than a narrow, long, narrow navigation, right? So think about how you navigate. The content roll-up, so if you're going to show content on your page and you're going to do a query and you're going to bring back a bunch of documents, expensive queries are going to take longer to load than non-expensive queries. So you want to optimize your queries for that. Large files, so if you have like videos or you have banners that are uncompressed, you know, large high-resolution graphics that you load, those are all going to take longer to load. Number of requests, so if you do a lot of JSON or JavaScript, CSS requests, you got a lot of images, you make round trips back and forth to the server to load different things. And then the last one kind of goes on that, lots of web parts, so you get a lot of different places to pull data from. Those are all going to contribute to performance. So in some cases, you're not going to redesign your SharePoint because you may need all this stuff and you may just have to be aware that it's going to take longer to load. But in other cases, you may want to have a top-level page that loads fast, and then as you dig into the content, it goes slower. So this sort of graphic, I got a little chart here, that little graphic that's going to build about cache. So the cache in SharePoint has got a little bit of cache, and it's distributed in SharePoint Online. So if you look at the left-hand side, that's your on-prem. So if you think about SharePoint on-prem, you got a page and it has cache on a server, one user, one server, right? And if you want to scale, you add multiple servers, you move content around, you add new cache. In SharePoint Online, I'll get my little thing to build. Oops. I think it was supposed to be automated. So each of the different colors kind of represents a different page. And so the pages can be scattered across multiple servers and actually even in multiple data centers. So the content that you're going to access or the user's going to access can be in multiple places and have to be gathered from multiple locations. And so the bigger the data call, the bigger the data payload, the longer it's going to take the load. The more round trips you make, the longer it's going to take the load. All right. So some of the tips for structural navigation for SharePoint. Keep the depth shallow. don't have your navigation go wide instead of deep. Use managed navigation, which is around metadata. So that's secure. There's no security trimming in the navigation. If you use metadata, it's faster to iterate all the sites across all of the servers. They may have cache for your site, for your SharePoint site. Using a search query to get the structure is faster. And then caching navigation and client storage also makes the site return faster. And caching things that are static, I think I have another slide about that, also makes it faster. So if you have like company logos or links that are static that don't change a lot, if you put those in user cache, that's going to make it go faster. So again, content queries. Use content by search. And then static content, we did talk about that. So if you have a shallow query, so you return depth, and I mean you return things that are less scope, then it's going to take less time. Okay, I don't know what the rest of those are about. So this one is simple image optimization. So if you have images you're going to put on the site, compress them before you put them up there. Delay loading, so if you can load part of it, you know, sort of the above the fold, below the fold, and have the things that are longer or take more to load farther down the page, the user's going to have a better experience. HTTP traffic, so there are CDNs, content delivery networks, that will store data, cache data. So if you can use that, that makes it easier, makes it faster. You can parallelize the downloads, you can bundle request assets together. If you minify the JavaScript and CSS assets, it actually increases the download size, and use sprites for static images. All right, OneDrive. Common problems with OneDrive are really around synchronization and authentication. Those are sort of the everyday problems we have. The library requires credentials. You get the exclamation point, so that's the little visual that says that your credentials aren't there. Syncing the library, a lot of times libraries fail to sync because they have too much data in them, and so that you reach the data limits. And so I think if the limit is removed, that may alleviate some of that. We'd have to double check. Isn't available offline. So if the option to make the library not available offline is set, sometimes users get confused because they have access to it at work, but when they go offline, they can't see it. So that's about education. There's nothing I can do about that. And then the site, the SharePoint site, has the same problem. Okay, so these are the tools. So in the last 6 months, we did a lot of work on guided walkthroughs. Has anybody seen a guided walkthrough or used any of those? No? Oh. Well, this will be new to you. Have you seen the DIY troubleshooter? Anybody? No. Have you seen the admin center tools? A few of you. Okay. So really what I want to do for the rest of the time is sort of talk about the tools, where they are, what we're doing, how we're investing in them, and then the last bullet on the right, the left-hand side there, about moving tools in line to the support experience. So really what we're trying to drive and what we think of as modern support is the diagnostics that we build and the tools that we build come in line into the request support experience. And I have a demo of that, so I can show you that. All right. So we'll start at the beginning. So from the admin center, we have tools. That's what these are here. And the first one is around readiness and connectivity. So it's what we think of as our HRC. Internally, we call it HRC. And it's just a bunch of series of tools that will try to do some readiness checks. You know, are you on the right version? Do you have the right DNS records? Is the domain, you know, registered? Can we ping it? You know, so on and so forth. And so we run a bunch of checks, and then we give you a report. And so we check what we think of as sort of this, the three Ds in this tool. There's the domain, DNS, and diagnostics. So those are the three things that sort of run in the background. You get a bunch of detailed reports. If you have a problem and you run that and you call Microsoft support, a lot of times they're going to ask you to run that because they're going to use that to try to diagnose the issue. So it's good to run that so that you're prepared when you get, if you have to get to there. The more tools takes you over here to tools and diagnostics website, where we're trying to keep this all up to date. And so this is by SKU. Some SKUs don't have access to all the tools. Some do. I don't know why that decision was made. It's way beyond my pay scale. So if you scroll down here, if you have Office 365 Enterprise, you can see a list of all the tools. Some of them are not native to Microsoft. You know, like, what is the one I saw down here earlier? NS Lookup. I mean, that's not necessarily a Microsoft tool, but it's in the list for you, right? So, and in here you can see there's guided walkthroughs. So they started putting them here. They weren't always in there. Where I have a KB article. Thought I loaded this earlier. It's my bad. So let's look at what one of those looks like. So each guided walkthrough has its own like article. And basically what it's going to do when it loads is it like asks you questions like you're talking to a support agent. You know, are you in a hybrid environment? Are you on-prem? Are you only in the cloud? And then you pick the one you want, and then it gets you to the next question. Are you having a problem with mail flow? Are you having a problem sending and receiving? You know, and so it's trying to walk you through, and then it's going to start suggesting what to check. Did you check this? Did you do that? Did you do this? So that's what the walkthroughs are. And so there's guided walkthroughs for pretty much all the workloads. There's from those for Link, there's for SharePoint, there's for OneDrive. There's for Exchange on-prem, and there's for Exchange online. And they're taking really long time to load. And so in the slide deck, I provide the link. There's a support article that actually lists all of them by product area. So if you can bookmark that, then as we add them, they'll just show up in the list. And then you can click to the one you want, and it'll take you through the walkthrough. All right, it's taking forever. So let me show you about one of the things that I care about, because this is what I work on, is service requests. So in the admin center, you can submit a service request to Microsoft. Did you guys know that? Okay. So we're trying to spend a lot of time making it easier. I don't know if we're going to be successful, but that's the goal. So when it comes up here.
Can I ask you a question about
Yeah. And does the portal reference it as open?
I mean, the portal will say open.
It says open, even though you called and closed it.
Yeah.
I think it's just a delay in the systems.
Weeks. Weeks?
I
have to go and close it.
You close it in the portal?
Yeah, I had to
close okay.
it in the portal. Microsoft never did.
Okay.
And the notes aren't in both places.
Oh, okay. So we are working on that. So we'll say I can give you a little architecture if you care about how it works. But the support requests actually query from our support organization's database, right? So they open cases. They've been in a transition of tools. So they went from a tool we called CAP to a tool we call SOL. But in that transition, there's a lot of things that are busted. So most likely, they're working at a one system on the phone and a different system online, and it's not correlating. So, but we are supposed to be finished with that transition by the end of January. I hope it gets better. So, unfortunately, that's sort of our internal words. You get to see all displayed there for yourselves. Oh, look, my walkthrough came up. So this is what the walkthrough looks like. These are all the ones, so by Exchange Server, there's Exchange Online, Link Online, SharePoint Online, OneDrive. That really takes forever. This one's still loading. What else was it? Okay, so here's the service request. So this is the request she was talking about. So if you open a request, you can see it here. It may or may not be accurate. It will be eventually. Not that that's helpful. So if you hit the plus button, you get to open a new one. Let me hit it again. Hopefully. My demo really sucks. Let me stop this guy and see if I can get this to work. Ah, there we go. So now when you want to create a service request, the first thing you're going to do is tell us what you want to request about. So let's do mail, Outlook, email, calendar tasks. So we're trying to make it a little bit more user-friendly as to what you're calling me about. It used to be you had to know exactly the specific service, and if you didn't get it right, the next drop-down didn't match, and it was confusing. So we're going to do mail, because in mail... if you have, so we're doing this idea around feature and symptom. So One of the things we're going to do here, so here's mail flow. So mail flow is our common problem. You can't send, you can't receive. So you select mail flow. And if you say, you know what, I received an NDR for an email message. Someone is trying to, you know, do something. Trying to send an email message. And you'll see that we popped up this thing, we have a troubleshooter. And so this is basically taking some of the tools we have in the Exchange Admin Center and putting them in line in the support experience. And so if you say, yeah, I want to run the troubleshooter, it's going to pop up over, I don't think I have access to it, but it's going to pop up over and it's going to start running diagnostics and it's going to give you some of the reports that we talked about earlier. It's going to do the domains and the DNS and it's also going to do message trace. It's going to look for what messages, you know, from that sender may or may not be stuck or where they're stuck and return information. That may take a while, so we'll go back here. So you'll see that some of them don't have the troubleshooter, and so what we're doing over time is we're trying to add additional troubleshooters into this experience. If you run the troubleshooter and it comes back and it can't help you, then it's going to give you support documents. It might say, well, this might help you, that might help you. So they're trying to drive people into the support experience to say, what's your problem, and then have us go out and try to get the curated list of content that you might care about for that problem. And so our intent, and so I guess our hope, is that that makes it easier to find things about what problem you're actually experiencing. And then as we collect, as people use the service, we're hoping to collect the data and analyze and say, well, these are the common problems people have, and so we really ought to build something to fix that. And I will say, as part of this process, this is an ongoing thing we're working on right now. And so over the next probably 6 months, we'll just keep slowly throwing more and more things out, you know, more diagnostics, more walkthroughs. And so we're trying to look at the root cause and determine how in the service, how do we just engineer those bugs out? How do we engineer the need to have a diagnostic or a troubleshooter at service? But that's a longer term goal. All right. Yeah, see that? I can't get that one to run. I tried it earlier. So I put the link here for the walkthroughs for you. So and then the DIY troubleshooter. Oh, okay. It's very similar to, actually, let's see if we can load one of these. I think I can get to the troubleshooter from here, too. Oops. Really, really, really slow. So here, this is the walkthrough. That's not the walkthrough. What is this? It's not fully loaded. Okay, the community DIY thing, there it goes. So this one is very similar to the walkthrough because it asks you who you are, and once it completely loads, you get the next button, and then it's like, what's your problem? And so it's not as specific for, so you have services, so it's the same kind of, it's much more IT pro orientated because you're going to know what the service is, right? Your user is not necessarily going to know. So if you have Exchange Online, it's going to keep going down, and it's going to try to drive you to the right content based on what you're looking for. That's what the troubleshooter does. So you can see here you can also do, like, say I have mail flow problem. You can select that, and it'll keep going down which part of mail flow. So it keeps asking you progressively more questions, and at some point it's going to get you to either a diagnostic tool or a help article to try to help you resolve the issue. And so this is what the guided walkthrough looks like. So it's a little bit, you kind of start from the area of where you know you're trying to troubleshoot, and then it starts asking you the questions to eliminate it. So where are the sender and the recipient? Are they in the same organization? Are they in different organizations? And so you can pick one, and then it goes on to the next question. And so it's, again, going to try to do a very similar thing. And I think our intent is really to move towards more guided walkthroughs that are targeted per a particular scenario and less about the DIY, but I don't have any plans for it to go away. The other tool that I didn't show you is the remote connectivity analyzer. Has anybody seen that one? Okay. So that one you guys are more familiar with, so we won't take the time to talk about that one. That one is also something we're continuing to invest in, and we add tests there as well. So if you're already aware of that, that is good. Okay, that was the demo. So I have a last couple of slides really quick, or just about resources. The Office 365 community is pretty robust. There is a lot of content out there. It used to be that was where you got access to guided walkthroughs. They were buried in the community, and so we're trying to do a better job of exposing that with putting them all in one article and stuff. But if you want to ask questions or work with people who are also on Office 365, the community is a good resource for that. This is the team blog. Like they mentioned in the keynote, it's kind of like where we're announcing our new stuff, right? What are we working on? What's rolling out? What's coming? And so it's sort of they kind of like to think of it as the newspaper. You know, it's like the daily newspaper about all things Office 365, what's happening in the service, what are we working on, what's coming now, what is rolling out in the process. These are product pages. There's some good information there. A lot of it's more marketing-driven, features and benefits, that kind of stuff. TechNet, of course, is the de facto place. And that was really it. And there's also the roadmap. So that's office.com/roadmap, in case you guys didn't get that. The demo or just the links? Want to copy down? Oh, you know it's available on Yammer, right? I'm supposed to tell you that. Does anybody have any questions?
Some of the slides seem to be missing from the download from the summit site.
Oh, I uploaded one this morning. Did you get the latest one? There should be 3 copies up there, so make sure you get the latest one. I think I put the date on it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll help you find it. Are you looking there as well in Yammer? Did you get the... Oh, you know what? I think I put it in the wrong Office 365 Summit list. I will go put it in the right spot as soon as we're done. Yeah, it's on the... For some reason, I had a separate Office 365 Summit, and they told me it was the same thing, but the number of files is different, so I'm assuming I put it in the wrong spot. If nobody... 2 people can't find it, it's probably my fault. So... Any other questions? Okay. That was it.